Host ABC News puts the president at the worst public approval rating of his presidency.
At this point, my goal every single day is just to make sure that we're delivering something.
Fighting for Idaho.
Colorado's marijuana industry getting a seal of approval. The state now handing out more than 300 business licenses to marijuana retailers, growers, and testing facilities.
Fighting for you.
Even though we have problems in our country, this is the time of year to look at all the good things and all the blessings that we have.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the morning.
Hey, buddy, you keep up the good work. Stay fired up, and I think your show's even better now that you're married.
On 580 KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
It may be the end of the year, but is it the end of the year for the battle for the heart and soul of America? Good morning, Kevin Miller with you once again. We go live to the great state of North Carolina, joined by our friend William Gein of Alley Beck, Americans for Legal Immigration. William, good morning.
Good morning, Kevin, and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, my friend. Before we get going on, well, the issue involving immigration and John Boehner's betrayal and your friend Lindsey Graham and everything else, are you familiar with our top story of the day involving Phil Robertson?
Yeah, and I put out a little personal Facebook post last night praying for the Robertson family because, unfortunately, I have some familiarity with the type of vitriol and persecution firestorm that's raining down on their family today. I mean, my prayers are with them, and I pray for them and to be able to be sustained by the Lord through the persecution, the intensive persecution that's going to follow.
And you know all about that. It is troubling when you think about this. Now, I have to ask you another question.
Sure.
Are you familiar with that show, Lizard Lick Towing?
Yes, I am familiar with it. And I will say, without giving away too much security information here, let's just say that I have some friends or family members that know the folks in the film and work around them.
Well, I was going to say, because they're in your part of the country, and you know, I used to live
there.
They're
right down the road from Raleigh, and I enjoy the show.
Right.
From my personal contacts, I'm told they're really nice folks, and you know, country people are just entertaining, Kevin. You know, a lot of the producers, and you know, with Duck Dynasty, what I think they were trying to do, they were trying to find some wild-haired, long-bearded country people to make into the next Honey Boo Boo, and it really shocked them when the show became one of the most popular on TV. But, you know, you're dealing with Southern entertainment people. A lot of times you're dealing with white Christians, and they're entertaining folks. The Lizard Lick people, I'm glad that they've got the success going for them. My little joke about them is I call them Repo Wrestling is my nickname for them, Repo Wrestling.
Well, that sure does fit. It was funny because I was looking at the show, and it's one of the most popular on cable. I go, oh, where are they? And I go, Wake County, North Carolina. I go, I know that place.
Lizard Lick. Yeah, you know, they can't get a car back without somebody getting a chair smacked across the back of their shoulders, or you know,
people shooting at them.
It's very similar to the type of theatrics you see in wrestling, if you're into that type of thing. But I'm glad to see some local North Carolina folks making good with that type of popularity. And, you know, to put some popularity with what's usually a pretty tough job. I mean, the repo business is not necessarily one that people would have described in the past as entertaining, I don't believe.
Now, before we get to anything, and I know this is at North Carolina Thursday, but your governor, Pat McCrory, is getting a lot of national news. They have weekly protests at the Capitol. People are looking at North Carolina because he's refused the government's monies, and he's cut the state off from it. He's had to cut back a bunch of unemployment benefits. What's the vibe there, and could we see governors emulating the former mayor of Charlotte, Pat McCrory, doing that nationwide?
Well, what's happened here, Kevin, is that the Republicans can, you know, have control of both the Senate and the House and the governorship for the first time in more than 100 and, oh gosh, whenever the Civil War was, 130-plus years. And what's happened in the last 30, 40, 50 years is that the Democratic political machinery has built up all these people and jobs all around the legislature, all of the DOT jobs and Department of Education, all of the different, you know, state jobs and universities and things like that. And so one of the reasons you have so much protest going on in places like Wake County is that, you know, that old guard liberal democratic presence is still very entrenched in the bedrock around here. But the people of North Carolina have decided to finally, you know, elect a different type of leadership, or actually somebody different than the Democrats for in the first time in 130 years. So it's that's where I think a lot of the friction is coming from. And of course, here in Wake County, the big issue was the school districts.
School districts. It seems like that's everywhere.
Neighborhood schools versus busing. I think that you had to get somebody different than me, but I believe there was a court ruling that said that Charlotte, North Carolina, or Mecklenburg County didn't have to bus students anymore. And, some crazy stuff was going on where you'd have, like, children in a cul-de-sac going to three different elementary schools every morning, including some children that were being forced to ride on buses about 3 hours a day there and back of their time to satisfy some 1950s, 60s. Idea of desegregation, and it was having a negative impact on families and students and stuff, and so they changed it, and then there was a big hoopla on that. So that was big here in Wake County, and it fed right into what's happening at the legislature now with the what we call, some of us call, immoral Mondays, where they go over there and act up so bad that several of them get arrested most times.
Yeah, I was going to say it has been covered by the New York Times and 60 Minutes and everybody.
Yeah, well, if you're on the left side, you can go out and get arrested and say about anything, and, you'll either be protected or elevated. If you're conservative and you come out and you say anything about your personal beliefs or anything like that, you'll be, either banned or, attacked terribly in the media, or both. The North Carolina media, which, used to attack me, the News and Observer and the Raleigh newspaper and the Charlotte papers, they finally shut up and stopped because they realized that the more they attacked me, the more popular I became, and that it actually helped elevate my visibility profile across the state. I even had one editor of the Charlotte Observer, Mary Shulkin, refer to me as Bill the Butcher, comparing me to a Gangs of New York character. And that was definitely an experience. I mean, being compared to somebody in a Leonardo DiCaprio film.
You don't get that every day.
Mm-mm. I should have to pay for publicity like that. But the bottom line to it is Bill the Butcher in the movie. I'd never really seen the full film. He's a violent, murderous racist. And so I wrote an editorial that they had to run in the Charlotte paper, and I'm sure that they were a bit chagrined to do so, but it was titled "I Am Not a Murderous Racist," and pointed out that although it sounded sort of tongue in cheek, "Oh, Bill the Butcher," when you do something like that, it's the typical name game labeling. Anybody that dares say anything that they don't like is going to get a label applied to them: sexist, racist, homophobic, anything like that, because the name of their game is that since America has been traditionally a center-right nation for 200 years, has been predominantly governed by people of European descendancy and Christian, different denominations of Christianity and deist backgrounds, they're trying to knock that down. So they're looking for any way to create division amongst any group. And so you've seen it escalate, I believe, under the Obama administration, an increased tension between white and black and Hispanic, between straight and and gay, between male and female, between young and old. Any differences as Americans that they can exploit and accentuate and increase, they don't miss an opportunity to do it. And anything that would give us any sense of national pride, like producing good products, producing good movies, going back to the moon, or having astronauts, anything that would give us a common sense of national pride is being removed from us in a process that I call, I'll call it two things: Grand Theft Nation and the controlled demolition of America.
Bill Gein with us, AllyPack, his his organization. Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. So I thought the year was done. No more legalizing the illegals. Your thoughts?
Well, we're pronouncing a bit of victory. In 2013, all of the illegal alien amnesty supporters lined up, including a lot of resources that these people had that we didn't know about, including what we're now tracking on a list at AllyPack.us of 35 Republican members of Congress, some of which, like Congressman Ted Poe from Texas and others, had really gone out of their way to convince us that they were immigration enforcers instead of appeasers. And but they were going to do it. And in the first year, Kevin, you know, it was really tough on us because those of us dedicated to fighting to preserve America no matter what were having trouble with the people who were saying, oh, we can't fight because this is a done deal. They're going to get it in 2013. Don't you see the president and even John Boehner is going to do this? We can't fight them, William. We had those people, that resistance is useless crowd. And then we had people saying, oh, it's not going to happen. Marco Rubio said he didn't have the votes for his own bill. You know, don't worry about it, William. We're not going to spend any time or any money trying to fight it because we don't have anything to worry about. We've been told that we don't have anything to worry about. And, yeah, psychological operations, propaganda designed to get people not to defend themselves. That went on, and then we saw Senate Bill S-744, an amnesty bill, passed the United States Senate 68 to like 32 or 30-something. They clobbered us. They passed an amnesty that would have created a new voting block of almost 20 million illegal immigrants, inserted into American politics within a decade, destroying the borders of the United States forevermore and leaving us here to mitigate the damages as best we could of the next 10 million and the next 10 million and the next 10 million to keep flowing in from the over 1 billion people on the planet that would probably naturally gravitate to America if allowed to do so. And so we went to the House, and we were able to defeat it in the House, and now the coast is clear for 2013. We have defeated Amnesty 2013, which was our goal, and we've done it. Now, we can't let our guard down, but if, you know, the next challenge that we have is that we're getting geared up to try to get quality GOP primary challengers to go against these identified 35 Republicans in the House, and at least four U.S. senators, including John McCain's best buddy, Lindsey Graham.
Your boy.
Yeah. Lindsey Graham's been trying his best to help Obama pass amnesty for years now, and, you know, we're supposed to have some type of, you know, D.C. is supposed to be an oppositional system. It's supposed to be where the White House and the legislature and the courts balance out powers between themselves in an oppositional, often confrontational role. And then we're supposed to have two political parties. But that is not what's happening. We have a one-party system pretending to be a two-party system. And you've got over-tanned, soap opera-esque Republicans like John Boehner, who aren't really Obama's opponent. They just play one on TV.
Well, William, stand by. More coming up with our friend William Gein of AllyPac. We will talk about John Boehner. We will talk about millions of illegal immigrants suing states so they get in-state tuition and what that means for your pocketbook and state budgets across America, and particularly here in Idaho.
Lean Idaho, a reason to get out of bed. Kevin Miller in the morning on 580 KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Up all night. 580 KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning as we continue on. Phone number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Joined by our friend William Gein of AllyPac, Americans for Legal Immigration. William, let's get to some of the issues that a lot of folks have been ignoring. And apparently you have people that are undocumented in this country illegally. They said, look, we're tired of being nice. You either change the laws and make us legal or we're going to get violent.
Well, they're not nice. I mean, this is a form of invasion. And you've got groups here that are being sponsored by like billionaires like George Soros and U.S. Chamber of Commerce monies that are getting in lawmakers' face to pursue an agenda, a broader agenda, dealing with forced economic union and forced population unions on this continent, similar to the European Union, against the wishes of the American people. This is an overthrow of the American Republic. This is an overthrow of our sovereignty. This is a way of forcing Americans into something we would never voluntarily accept. And so we've got a situation here where it's not nice, and when they don't get their way, they start smacking us around, just like anybody else would face if you were facing a mugger. You know, a mugger pulls out a knife or a gun and tells you to give your wallet, you might just be fine. They'll thank you and wish you Merry Christmas when they take off with it. The same's true for a lot of other crimes. When people are getting what it is they want, then everything can just remain nice. If you don't do what they say, you know, then you're in trouble. And one of the things that's relative to your state, you know, we have one of our 35 targeted members of Congress that we're looking for a qualified GOP primary for. Paul Labrador is on the pro-illegal alien amnesty list.
Really?
Mm-hmm. We've got him documented as trying to deliver an amnesty with John Boehner to Barack Obama. We've got him from, let's see here, January.
So this is
March
Congressman
20th.
Raul Labrador here.
Raul Labrador. Article from, looks like, March 20th of this year by Kate Nacera that ran in Politico, titled Raul Labrador. Labrador, Republicans should be open-minded on immigration, where it says that he claims that he said that while arguing that calling something a pathway to citizenship was a minor issue in the overall immigration debate, the conservative Idaho congressman seemed to be open to eventually allowing undocumented immigrants to earn citizenship. Quote, what I think should happen is for illegal immigrants to come out of the shadows, become legalized in some way, and that status could lead in some way to legal residency and citizenship eventually, but just the same as everybody else, he told reporters. Truth of the matter is, if you legalize the illegal immigrants currently in the United States of America, you're going to create a new voting bloc of 20 million illegal immigrants. Even though 80-plus percent of Americans are demanding the borders be secured and our immigration laws be enforced right now, they are not being adequately enforced. I don't care what anybody says about Obama deporting more people than ever before. That's not true. That's not true. They're just counting the numbers of the people they set on the other side of the border at night for them to run back in here. Obama has been an illegal immigrant's best friend, and the vast majority of our existing immigration and border laws designed to protect American jobs, taxpayer resources, and lives of the thousands of Americans that are being killed by illegal immigrants each year without significant mainstream media coverage, you know, that's what is going on here, and we can't get that to stop now. If they create the path to citizenship, if the American public is sucker enough, dumb enough to believe that you can give them what they want, you're tired of the pressure, you're tired of the arguing, you're tired of the consternation of fighting this, oh, I'll just give them what they want this time, we're done, we're cooked. There's no way that the center-right Americans or the modern Americans that have dominated American politics for so long can compete with 20 million illegal immigrants turned into a voting bloc. They will vote against any candidate that would secure our borders or even acknowledge the sovereignty of the United States. You know, a lot of these illegal immigrants don't believe they need anybody's stinking badges to come across the border because they don't believe in the territorial jurisdiction of the United States as being legitimate. And so a lot, what's going to happen, Kevin, is if groups like Alipac and others don't stop the turncoats and traitors in Washington like Raul Labrador from passing an amnesty for Obama, illegal alien amnesty for Obama, and they get it through, within 5 or 10 years, a lot of people out there who are blissfully unaware of the negative impacts of illegal immigration are going to feel it. But the difference is going to be because they're going to take the mask off, the smiles are going to end, they're going to have no more need to pretend to be nice to everyone, but the difference is going to be that you've already passed the point of no return. There will be no peaceful political resolution to the problem at that point.
Now, you are looking for somebody to primary Raul Labrador?
Yes. We're looking for a qualified candidate to run against Raul Labrador and to take our Alipac candidate survey, which is it's a one-question survey this year, Kevin. I'm going to get it on screen real quick because I want to read this to you. We're looking to try to determine where a candidate stands on the issues of illegal immigration and amnesty. And we've boiled it down to just one question. I mean, we ask them the questions that they do have to fill out real quick about, you know, what the name of their campaign is, who they're running against, their party affiliation. But we want to know, as a candidate for election or reelection, do you A, support America's and legal immigrants, Americans and legal immigrants by supporting the adequate enforcement of America's existing border and immigration laws as the U.S. Constitution requires for the protection of American jobs, elections, taxpayer resources, health, and lives? Or B, are you supporting illegal aliens and their supporters by supporting changing existing laws to accommodate millions of illegal immigrants through, quote, immigration reform, end quote, amnesty, which would allow illegal aliens to either have a path to citizenship, a new visa, or some new form of legal status, which would eventually lead to a new voting bloc of 11 to 20 million illegal aliens, which would in turn destroy any future hopes of border or immigration law enforcement in America? So you can only be one or the other. If you come out and you say that you want secure borders or secure the borders first and then give illegal aliens citizenship, it doesn't work that way. You have to choose between borders and giving them citizenship. You have to choose between having immigration laws and citizenship, because if you give them citizenship, you know, here we are. Once again, we've got 80-plus percent of Americans that want these immigration laws enforced that are being overruled by some type of non-constitutional power in Washington, D.C. that says you can't have that. It says in the Constitution, all states protected from invasion.
Right.
Somebody, some power groups inside the Beltway in D.C. say, no, you will be invaded.
Now, William Gein with us here at 580KIDO. We've got a role, but if people want to get a hold of you, maybe somebody listening wants to challenge Congressman Labrador, what can they do?
Oh, please come see us on the web at www.alipac.us, alipac.us. We are Americans for Legal Immigration Political Action Committee. We are the nation's largest political action committee, trying our best to rank federal candidates based on whether they're with the vast majority of American voters and support of borders and immigration law enforcement, or if they're with the small, less than 32% of Americans that support some form of citizenship amnesty for illegal immigrants. We definitely need some great candidates running across the country in many different districts, and we also need one for Raul Labrador, because basically we believe Labrador can be defeated, since, truth be known, he is at odds with over 80% of his GOP constituents.
William, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Kevin.
Take care. Let's get you to news now at 580KIDO.
Abe Ramsey, weekdays noon till 3 on 580KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
580KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning. Phone numbers 580-5436, 580KIDO. Coming up, a gentleman that we all know, we all love. He's been with us many times. He is a pillar of goodness in our community, and I don't say that often about anybody. You know me, I'm a curmudgeon. Our friend Dennis Mansfield will be joining us very soon to talk about his bestseller, Beautiful Nate, and to talk about the idea of coping with loss and the God part of our lives. You know, so many times we jump into the idea of instant gratification of secular humanism and me, 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 and then we go to church, maybe we pay attention, maybe we don't, and then we see other people who live it, like our friends at the Boise Rescue Mission, like our friends at the Canyon County Animal Shelter and other places. And I think to myself, what lessons can we learn from folks like Dennis? Dennis, good to have you with us here. And as we move along through this day, when you talk about dealing with tragedy and dealing with loss, and certainly what happened with that tragic bus accident, the loss of the 11-year-old.
Yes.
How do we cope with that?
Kevin, I don't think we do cope. You know, I think cope is an overstated, overused term. I think what we do is we choose to live. When our son Nate died almost 5 years ago at age 27, it was like a shotgun blast to my chest. I can't even describe. Everything changed. And the question was, how did my bride Susan and I choose to react? And I do think that two things are true. Number one, love is not an emotion. Love is a choice. We choose to love someone. Because if it's only emotion, it'll come and go. It'll come and go. But when you choose to love someone, you stay. You're there. And when we chose to love God in the middle of the loss of our son, we chose a whole different route. Job said that all these things were falling on him. And he said, I still choose God. And, you know, the book of Job is not one that we pick up when we're, you know, hey, I'm feeling kind of good. I'll pick up the book of Job. That'll really get me going.
Not when you're undefeated. Maybe when you're 8-4.
Yeah, maybe when you're 8-4. That's a true point. Certainly for us, we realize that the Lord gives, the Lord takes away, and blessed be the name of the Lord. And so in one sense, last night I was grieving over the mom and dad who sent their 11-year-old boy off. 24 hours ago, he was alive. And at 8 in the morning, the crash happens, and he's hurled into eternity. We can choose how we're going to process that. If we're people of faith, we choose it in the context of that. If we're not, we begin the process of choosing whether we should be people of faith.
It seems easier said than done, though.
Oh, my heavens. I think it's the most difficult thing that I've ever faced in my life. When they brought my son's body back, and Bowman Funeral Parlor was our choice, I went in to see my son's body. He wasn't in a casket. He was on a gurney, 6'4", 200-pound, handsome man, who had died because two drugs had interacted in his sleep and killed him because of a back injury, opiates that killed him. Now, he had been an addict, and he had been in jail, and he'd been in prison. That's what Beautiful Nate, the book that I wrote, it talks about. Yet, as I looked at his body, and I looked at his face, and I put my arm under his neck, I wanted to hold my son. I realized the greater goodness of God was there, that this life will soon be passed. In his case, he was 27 years old, you know, born in 1981. Only the things of eternity will last. And that made me, I mean, I wept tears that I'd never wept. I had a soul tearing that I never thought a man or a woman could have. And God is good. And I think,
even in that moment, you're saying God is good.
I'm absolutely, because how we practice is how we play. And if our life is absorbed with victimhood and the things that somehow the man did to me, you know, when the things that really crush us happen, we're going to be absolutely worthless to the world, to the people around us, to the people who need us. My father, Bill Mansfield, was best friends with my son, Nate. And he called me. He was a World War II veteran, a Korea War. He was a veteran during the Vietnam War. And he said, "Listen to me, son." He said, "People around you need you. Gird up your loins. Act like a man." Now, he wasn't saying that in a disparaging way. He was saying, be the man you are and honor the people who are grieving around you. It was the best advice I could have ever had. Sensitive. Listen, I was weeping, of course. He wanted me to. I wanted to. I had to. And there's a moment in time where I had to say, all right, how can I bless others? How can I touch others? That's ultimately why Simon & Schuster asked me to write Beautiful Nate. And subsequent to that, I've written a new book, Finding Malone, about my father, Bill Mansfield. Both of those.
Dennis, we talked about this yesterday for about 3 hours at 580 KIDO. You know, a lot of people say, okay, you wrote this book about your son, but Nate was your son. Mm-hmm. It couldn't have been easy to share his story and your story to thousands of people, to put that out there to be accepted or to be rejected.
See, Kevin, that's a fantastic point. The truth of the matter is the book isn't about Nate, and it isn't about me. It's about the person that's reading it. Because every one of us have these incredible, veiled moments of life where we failed, where life has crushed us.
Some of us more than others, and some of us repeatedly.
Yeah, repeatedly. And you know, if we were honest with ourselves, which we, I think, seldom are, unless it's the twilight of our sleep or the moment in our shower or the time of vulnerability because loss is around us some fashion, if we'll be honest with ourselves, we need to process the loss, whatever the loss or losses are. And most of us don't. And so what I've said and what Beautiful Nate's about is really beautiful you, beautiful me. It's how can we take the things that have crushed us and then allow the God who's in the universe, who really does love us, to rearrange our molecules, to rearrange who we are. The Dennis Mansfield that existed in the 90s, who was the ardent conservative, you know, BS, let me stand for this and stand. God, you know what? What a joke. You know, the vulnerability that I speak about in Beautiful Nate and Finding Malone is that in many ways, I was an idiot. I was an insensitive jerk to the people who were hurting around me because I had all the answers. Well, aren't you bitching? You know, come on. Where was I when the truth of my faith was there and someone was broken and I was too busy moving in a political agenda to even notice? How many times did I sit at restaurants and not even know the name of the waiter or waitress that were serving me because I was too busy being me? And I think when my son went to jail and then went to prison, I began to look around at those that are the unlovelies of our culture and realize, man, that's somebody's son or daughter. Yeah. That's somebody's husband, wife. And all of a sudden, things began to change. And I saw my DNA change. And it isn't because I wanted to. This is the new Nixon or something, you know. It was. And I had to take a fierce inventory. And when I did, oh, life got better. Even with the death of my son, life got better. And, you know, we're doing a book signing tomorrow over at the Family Christian bookstore next to Shopko. And I've invited a lot of ex-addicts and ex-inmates that were a part of my life to come and be with me. These are from my New Hope days. People who lived in our houses. They're people that aren't even asked to come into stores. In fact, oftentimes they're asked to leave because they're pretty gnarly looking guys and gals. You know what I'm talking about? The toothless, what most of us would say are the sort of dregs of society. They're not the dregs of society. They're God's kids, man. They're my brothers. They're my sisters. And if we're honest with ourselves, and we seldom are, we sort of live in a delusional world about the world according to Dennis. Those are the things that are the real substance of religion. Those are the things that are helping people, orphans and widows, loving the unlovely. Christ didn't come for the purpose of the kings. He was the king. He came for the process of the kids, the people we loved. And so somewhere in the middle of all this, you know, I've been a huge failure on many levels, huge failure.
These are not easy things to say, yet you're saying them here.
I know. They're not easy to live, and they're not easy to be honest about. And yet the truth of the matter is, for Susan and me, when someone asked us about our youngest son, Colin, they said, you know, tell us how you raised a West Point cadet who's a senior this year. We want the secrets to your success, you know. And I kind of looked at him and I said, well, if you're going to ask me that, you might as well ask me how I raised a heroin addict who went to prison and then died. There are no secrets. There's just love. There's pouring yourself into another human being and doing it in a way that's honest and vulnerable. If you're not doing that, you're not living life. You're pretending to live life, but you're not living life.
You know, let me hit you with this, and we've got about 2 minutes left. I own the domain name Hype to Humble. Mm-hmm. Here at 580KIDO, and I've often thought that we, you know, younger in life, we're always hyping ourselves, and in the end, true humility is the way to go.
You know, it is. It is. At the book signing, I'm hoping to meet a lot of new friends on Saturday night, 6 to 8 p.m.
Isn't that exhausting, meeting new friends?
No. It's life-giving.
Is it?
Because here's what I found. Most of my old friends, they weren't really my friends.
Find out who your friends are when you're down.
They're mere acquaintances. And a lot of people love to be in other people's shadows. And I threw a pretty big shadow for a long time. And that was pretty amazing for a midget. It's true.
Finally, some words of encouragement for people dealing with this tragic accident. We've got about 90 seconds left. Or people that are having a tough time today.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a couple different things happening. The accident of the little 11-year-old. I think there's going to be a community grief about Coach Pete if he leaves. That's an honest statement. He's, oh, come on, sports. No, it's life. Pete has ingratiated himself into the fabric of this community. The little 11-year-old boy is hurled into eternity. His mom and dad had all of his Christmas gifts purchased. How do we comprehend that? We don't. Life is bigger than our years. It's eternal. And if we fail to take the God factor into consideration, we fail to see reality. My son is alive. My son knows Abraham Lincoln, man. My son walks around with George Washington. Think about that. My son, the history buff. My son who ran Mike Boyle's literature drop and Shirley McKeag's race when he was 16 and 17 years old. My son who helped and loved Russ Fulcher, who loved Butch Otter. My son is alive in eternity. And that's where we're going, if we'll only admit it. This is a welcome mat on a doorway to a threshold of what life really is.
Dennis Mansfield, author of Beautiful Nate, we appreciate it, sir.
Oh, Kevin, that's great to be here with you, man.
Very warm environment. Thank you, sir.
Oh, you betcha.